Ave Maris Stella, Dei Mater Alma.
Hey, welcome everybody, Steve with Sense of Fidelium, well, Sense of Fidelium and the Sense of Fidelium Hour on the Carolina Catholic Media Network. Let's get right to it. I did a little thing on patience last week with the help of a redemptorist monk in Scotland. Let me continue that to be the final segment or final video or show on this topic, I guess. Well, there might be another one on the topic, but just to wrap it up, because he did seven different videos on this. So let's get right back to it, and I'll let our beloved monk teach us a lesson.
Manifests itself through various other virtues. St. Alphonsus actually wrote a whole book, or almost a whole book, about this one chapter alone, going into detail about how to practice those virtues that are bound together and enlivened by the virtue of charity. And that book that I read a selection from a few minutes ago, The Love of God in Practice, is that particular book. And the interesting thing about this chapter from St. Paul is that the first virtue that St. Paul names is the virtue of patience. Charity is patient, 1 Corinthians. Bishop William Ullathorne, a former bishop of Birmingham in England, a friend of Cardinal St. John Henry Newman, and who also met the Curia of Ars and received a prophecy from him that in the future, at some point, England would be converted once again. This bishop wrote a book on the virtue of patience called Christian Patience, The Strength and Discipline of the Soul. And he asks an interesting question. If the perfection of the soul consists in the perfection of charity, the perfect love of God for his own sake, and perfect love of neighbor as ourselves for the love of God, what room is there for other perfections? How can the Apostle St. James say that patience hath a perfect work? How is it that our Lord can say in the Gospel, in patience you shall possess your souls, from St. Luke? Bishop Ullathorne answers this question by observing that first, the virtue of charity takes hold of the other virtues, animates them with her fire, inspires them with her motive, draws them into her service, and employs them, whether faith, hope, patience, or whatever other virtue, for her own completion and perfection. So we see that charity binds the virtues together, gives them a life that they would not otherwise have, and uses them to achieve the perfection of charity. The second point that Bishop Ullathorne makes is that, thanks to original sin, we find ourselves in a corrupted state. We have been damaged. Our passions have been disordered, and they rebel against our reason, which ought to rule them. We often find ourselves carried away by irritation, restlessness, weakness, inconstancy, anger, and sadness. Our natural powers need the virtue of patience in order to bring them back into subjection to right reason and to our will, to be subject to the virtue of charity. So patience, then, is the test of charity. As Bishop Balathorn puts it, true patience for the love of God is the highest test and the most evident proof of the presence of a noble degree of charity. Because patience is its perfecting quality, making it whole and entire, failing in nothing. It is the surest test, because it cannot be easily mistaken, as it can only be obtained, even with the help of grace, by dint of labor, self-combat, and effort. But we have the sensible result in the possession of oneself and in peace of soul. Because the soul was made for God, it can only find its perfect happiness in God. This means that for the soul to possess itself, nothing less than placing God as the chief object of mind and affections will suffice. The soul cannot possess itself if it is the slave of the passions, the slave of anger, the slave of fear, the slave of avarice, and so forth. The soul cannot possess itself if it is ruled by other creatures that are less than itself, and which trouble, degrade, and divide it, taking reason and the will away from what is better than itself. The soul also cannot possess itself within itself, because by itself the soul is poor, disturbed, and discontented. Only in love adhering to God, and in patience persevering in that adhering to God, can the soul possess itself. So clearly, we need the virtue of patience. St. John Climacus says, in fact, that to the spiritual man, patience is more essential than food. The reason being that food strengthens the body and preserves it from weakness. But patience strengthens the soul, and without it, no virtue can be solid. And at the end of the day, we are more bound to care for the soul than for the body, since if we lose our soul, we lose everything. St. Peter Damian, Cardinal and Doctor of the Church, says that the man whose patience breaks down may have the other virtues, but he will never have their strength and solidity. There is a strong connection between the virtue of patience and the virtue of humility, a connection so intimate that neither virtue can make much progress without the other. St. Francis of Assisi, a model of both of these virtues, would often say, "Hail humility with thy sister patience." The reason for this close connection is that what humility begins, patience consolidates. As Bishop Balathorn says, humility purifies the soul, patience fortifies the will. Humility subjects the soul to God, patience rests the soul on God. Humility makes the soul simple and sincere. Patience makes her firm and constant. Humility keeps the soul in her just and true position. Patience protects her in the peaceful possession of that position. Bishop Balathorn concludes from this, "It is not therefore humility alone or patience alone, but humility and patience in their happy combination with charity that establish the groundwork of the Christian virtues. And on this secure basis, we are able to work out our our perfection. If we look at God's providence as it manifests itself in the world, we see everywhere signs of the infinite perfection of his divine patience. We see him sustaining what is weak by nature, upholding at every moment what would by itself fall into nothingness. We see him patiently putting up with the disorder brought into the world by our sins, the world that he created, and not just permitting this disorder, but drawing good out of it. We see him patiently exercising his mercy towards us after we have offended him, giving us time to repent of our sins, pouring out inspirations, gentle calls, and warnings.
And you can see that just finishing up this segment of the first block, if the liturgical wars. God is being very patient with everything that's going on. Why can't we? You know, I'm a fellow quote-unquote trad. If God can tolerate and be patient with it, why can't people like myself? That's a big thing I heard. A couple guys speak about that. We don't get a lot. We don't see a lot of patience, long suffering. We don't see that. Patience means suffering. Suffering through. You get mad at a red light. How many people get mad at a red light? Oh, I'm late. I gotta get here. Somebody in the grocery checkout aisle is you're impatient. There's a lot of this can work for everyday lives. That more on the next segment.
Hi everyone. I'm Dr. John Acquaviva, host of Faith and Sport here on Carolina Catholic Radio. Our show addresses the aspects of sport, character, morality, and ethics often neglected in everyday sports conversations. For instance, we discuss the morality of transgender athletes, some dioceses' decision to disallow practice or games on Sundays, and the poor habit of injecting politics into the game. But first, I want to thank you for listening to our network of shows, and in particular, our show, Faith and Sport. The Carolina Catholic Media staff works very hard to bring you important and updated content directly related to our wonderful faith. And considering Carolina Catholic Media is fully funded by the listener, we need your financial help to keep bringing this programming to you. So please offer a monthly pledge or one-time donation to keep us moving in the right direction. And join me, Dr. John Acquaviva, as I discuss my two favorite topics, my faith and the world of sport, on the Faith and Sport Show here on Carolina Catholic Media Network. And we look forward to your donation.
Hi everyone, it's Jason Murphy for the Catholic Men's Conference of the Carolinas and the Obligation Radio Show here on the Carolina Catholic Media Network. Registration is now open for the 13th annual Catholic Men's Conference of the Carolinas to be held on March 18th, 2023 at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church. It's going to be an amazing day of faith, fellowship, and prayer. Of course, we'll be joined, as always, by our own Bishop Peter Jugas of the Diocese of Charlotte. We also have a great lineup of speakers, including Charles Frawney. Charles is the author of Slaying Dragons, What Exorcists See, and What We Should Know. He's going to be there to discuss spiritual warfare. Also joining us, Jonathan Fanning. He is an author, speaker, an entrepreneur, and a father. Coming to us from High Point, North Carolina, the Diocese of Charlotte, is Deacon John Clark. Deacon is a former NYPD SWAT officer and former MMA fighter. You won't want to miss this one. Scott Wieman is going to be another one of our speakers. He's with Catholic in Recovery. He's going to talk to us about addiction and recovery for Catholics. And our MC this year will be Kevin Spaulding. Kevin is a speaker, an author, and business life coach. You can go online now to www.catholicmenofthecarolinas.org. Make sure to use the promo code RADIO and save $5. We look forward to seeing you there on this awesome day full of faith, fellowship, and prayer. For the Catholic Men's Conference, Carolinas, the Obligation Radio Show, my name is Jason Murphy. God bless, and Esto Vir.
Welcome, everybody, back to the Sense of Fidelium Hours. Your host, Steve Cunningham, sensefidelium.com. By the way, if you go to the .com website, I have every day featured sermons, different ones every day. If you're familiar with Formed, they have about 20 for the entire month of the entire season of Lent. They get a pretty good cash, you know, helping from a diocese out in the West. I don't, but I have exponentially more information and good stuff than they have. Imagine if I had the income they had. I don't know. You tell me. I had 20 sermons on the first Sunday of Lent the other day. Again, they had five, just videos of it. But anyway, check out .com, sensefidelium.com for every day, your homepage, and you'll get, again, Saint of the Day sermons. If you're we're filming this during Lent, the Monday during Lent sermon, Tuesday during Lent sermon, Wednesday, I have them for the entire season. Check it out. Anyways, let's get back to patience. Talk about patience on my part. Anyway, let's have the monk finish up what he was getting at right here.
So if we are to be like God, we need the virtue of patience. And this need is stronger when we consider our weakness. As the bishop and martyr Saint Zeno describes. Saint Zeno says, "Whilst we seek the blessed life with the earnest sighs of our nature and look for it through the various virtues, they are all brought to their rest through patience. Without patience, nothing can be conceived by the mind, nothing can be understood, nothing can be taught. For all things look to patience. Neither faith nor hope, neither justice nor humility, neither chastity nor honesty, nor concord nor charity, nor any act of virtue, nor even the elements of nature are able to hold together or keep their consistency without the nerve, restraint, and discipline of patience." Patience is always mature. It is humble, prudent, cautious, provident, and contented under every necessity that arises. Tranquil in the day of clouds, and amidst the tempests of provocation, it allows nothing to disturb the serenity of the soul. The patient man knows of neither alteration nor regret. Who can say that he ever suffers loss? Whatever he has to endure, you will find him as complete at the end of his sufferings, as though he had suffered nothing. How can we calculate the results of his patience? When he seems to have undergone defeat, we find he has got the victory. No force, no violence can drive patience from its position. Neither labor, nor hunger, nor nakedness, nor persecution, nor fear, nor danger can move patience from its resolution. No power, no torments, no death, come at whatever shape, no ambition, no enjoyment of felicity can shake the constancy of patience. Robustly balanced in a certain elevated and divine temperance that calms the soul into peaceful moderation, patience abides immovable. And to enable it to master all difficulties, its first conquest is over the soul herself. The virtues cannot be virtues, nor can the state of the elements be lasting, nor can they flow in their well-known connection through their solemn circles, unless patience, like a solicitous mother, be the keeper of things and the regulator of their changes. So, let us turn to our Divine Redeemer. Let us fall on our knees and ask him for an increase in this great virtue so that we may grow in the perfection of charity. May our Divine Redeemer and our Mother Perpetual Succor bless you abundantly.
Now, this is a, I think we did the a moral evil, all moral evil is a result from impatience last week. So I'm going right into his third one about being calm and not getting angry.
On the live stream yesterday, I spoke once again about the virtue of patience, following the lines laid out by Bishop William Ullathorne of Birmingham. Yesterday, we saw that impatience is to be found in every sin, since whoever is evil, as Tertullian says, is impatient of what is good. We also saw that patience is in the will and performs a double office, holding the will to what is good and holding it away from what is evil. We see that patience is to be found in the practice of all the other virtues for this same reason, that it helps each of those virtues to attain to what is good, what the good that is sought by each of those virtues, whether it's faith, hope, charity, or any of the others, and it holds the will away from the obstacles to those virtues. We say that since patience, or we saw that since patience is in the will, it should not be confused with sentiments or feelings. You may not necessarily feel patient when you are struggling with temptations, but if you resist them, you are indeed practicing the virtue patience. And finally, we saw that patience is primarily an interior virtue, but that it should gradually flow over into our exterior conduct. And having established those points, we'll now carry on. The next point that Bishop Ullathorne makes is an observation that many people read books about virtues and would like to profit from what they have read. But, he says, the knowledge they gain is but little compared with what they might obtain, because they look more into the book than into themselves. So whether it's the book that you read or the sermon that you listen to, whether you are looking up the theory about the various virtues, that's all quite important so that we can know what truly is a virtue, what truly is a power of our soul, what is the opposite of it. But in the end, all of this theory, all of this book learning, cannot substitute for taking the time to reflect on the state of one's own soul, one's own personal situation. And this is why saints such as St. Alphonsus urge the practice of mental prayer, setting aside a certain period of time each day to retire into a silent place, often with the help of a good book, to think about the mysteries that are contained there, to reflect on the state of our own soul, to ask for the graces that we need, and to make the practical resolutions that are necessary to grow in the virtues, asking for the grace to be able to keep those resolutions afterwards. The very act of persevering every day in mental prayer, doing it for a fixed time, and not abandoning it, starting with a small amount, maybe 15 minutes or so, and then gradually building up from there, itself ends up becoming an exercise of the virtue of patience. Bishop Ullathorne carries on to consider in what way patience is both a universal and a special virtue. So yesterday, I spoke about how it was a universal virtue, because all of the other virtues are affected by it. As a special virtue, patience is opposed to vexation and anger on the one hand, and to sadness on the other hand. Vexation, according to Bishop Ellithorne, is the beginning of anger, and it has many degrees, ranging from mild resentment and moving on up all the way to outrageous fury. It arises from grief and sadness due to some real or imaginary offense or injury, and it awakens the appetite to revenge, even if that revenge is something small, such as merely saying a rude word, or silently harboring a grudge. He says, if we look into the interior of the angry man, he can no longer be recognized for what he was.
We'll finish this particular topic on the other side of the break.
On January 31st, 2019, Carolina Catholic Media signed on Charlotte's first Catholic radio station, AM 1270 WCGC. By the grace of God, we celebrate the past 4 years and look forward to continuing our apostolic vision and mission to serve the Carolina Catholic community. We are evangelistic partners with our clergy, active parishioners, the fallen away, and the homebound. We are accessible to all Christians, agnostics, and atheists. With distribution of a wide array of content across 7 media platforms, there truly is something for everyone. During these past 4 years, Carolina Catholic has expanded to 7 media platforms that include radio, internet stream, mobile app, website, YouTube, social media, and e-newsletter. Nearly all local programs are available by podcast and video on demand. In the year ahead, we're committed to promote more local parish, school, and ministry events, more live broadcasts, and more valuable content that showcases our dynamic local Carolina Catholic community. Of all the Catholic radio stations in the U.S., Carolina Catholic is arguably a leader in locally produced programs. To continue our work, Carolina Catholic Media needs $15,000 in monthly funding to continue operations across our 7 media platforms. We are 100% dependent on your generosity. If you love what we're doing, please join us with a monthly tithe or annual gift. We have partnership plans available for parishes, schools, and ministries. If you own a business, you can be a program sponsor on one or all of our platforms. You can do a live broadcast of a special event, with promotion before and rebroadcast after. On behalf of everyone at Carolina Catholic Media, we thank you for your past support and look forward to you joining us with the resources the apostolate needs to continue to evangelize the truth of Jesus Christ and our Catholic faith across the Carolinas. May God bless you and your family abundantly.
Welcome everybody back. Steve Cutting with Sons of Fidelium Hour. And again, we're doing the second part of our patience thing because I thought it was just such a great series that the monk did out in Papastranse. And I've read the book. I have the book. It's out of print. If anybody wants to get it reprinted, please, you'll do the world a great favor by reprinting this thing. This thing is fantastic. Helped change away a lot of what I've been thinking, doing, and just life in general. So it was a really, really, really good, just tremendous book. You can find it on Amazon, but I don't think there's that many copies left on there. I just got a real good hardcover now with a, you know, whatever you call the little divider in the middle. It's, you know, I got it for like $20 or something like that. It's tremendous. It's gold. But anyway, let's get back to our monk friend.
Imagination has usurped the place of reason and crowds the mind with hateful images and vindictive motives. St. Gregory says that in such a state, lashed with anger, the soul is all in disorder. Her peace has fled, and rent and torn with sharp and bitter trouble, that soul is herself no longer. She has lost the power derived from her resemblance to God. Thus far, St. Gregory. Bishop Paul of Thorn says, anger opens the door to all the vices and passions, such as rashness, grief, hatred, strife, insult, violence, indignation, and so on. And as Hugh of St. Victor says, as pride takes man from God, and envy takes man from his neighbor, anger takes a man from himself. Even in the lesser degrees, such as sensitiveness, touchiness, annoyance, displeasure, disdain, they're still to be found at the germs of vexation and anger, as well as a corresponding degree of sadness. But it is precisely these lower degrees that, as Bishop Ullathorne says, that present the most numerous occasions for self-discipline. The first movements of impatience, the first uneasiness of dissatisfaction, are warnings that to patience to be on its guard, lest trouble arise to disturb the soul and take hold of the will. Saint Jerome says of these first movements of the passions, which threaten to grow if they are neglected, when the enemy is small, kill him. So how does this work in practice? Well, for one thing, we should prepare ourselves beforehand, while we are in a calm state. And one particularly useful way to do this is to think about, to bear in mind, the good qualities of the people we live with, and whom we encounter on a daily basis, while at the same time calmly being aware of their limitations also. The reason being that if we are aware of these ahead of time, we will be less likely to misjudge their intentions when the temptation to anger and irritability comes up when we are dealing with them. We will know what to expect from them, and we'll also know what we reasonably cannot expect from them. We all have different characters, says Bishop Ullathorne, and this is because we have different limitations. Some of them are natural, some of them come from the different backgrounds that we have been through, the growing up, the situation we've been in growing up, the experiences that we've had are unique to each one of us. And this one is an important one, much of this limitation also arises from the habits that we have formed. But, says Bishop Ullathorne, it is absurd to expect the same habits, sentiments, qualities, and powers in all persons, to judge all people by the same standard. We must ultimately take people for what they are, because other people have to do the same for us. This is especially true in any community or society that is meant to be close-knit, particularly in marriage, in the family, and in religious life. Different temperaments in different members of the family or the religious congregation require that private interests must be merged into the common good. As Catholics, we are members of the mystical body of Christ, which means that we are called to imitate him. And if we are to imitate him, we should think about the people he associated with and how he interacted with them during his time on earth. He chose to associate himself with simple people, with sinners, with people who at times just didn't get it. People who he'd tell them something and they just didn't get what he was saying sometimes. Think about how annoying it must have been for God to have to listen to St. Martha complaining that her sister Mary is not helping her with the chores. Or hearing St. Peter telling him, "Yes, Lord, I'll die with you," when he knew that a few hours later, St. Peter would deny him three times. But this did not disturb our Divine Redeemer's peace of soul. He knew what to expect from those he interacted with. He knew how to respond to them and how to lift them up. And we should imitate him here. Another point that Bishop Ullathorne raises is injury. Injury, whether it is real or imaginary, and most of the time it is imaginary, is one of the things most prone to making us lose patience and to fall into sins of anger. It is very easy for sensitive people to imagine themselves injured by other people, both by their words and by their actions. Often enough, they imagine themselves be injured more by their friends, family, superiors, and those whom they are very close to. More than, in fact, than by other people whom they don't know so well. The reason being that they expect more affection from them, those who are close to them. And they suffer more if they think they are being undervalued by those who are close to them. Often, if a person blames himself for something he is dissatisfied with, it is also very easy to think that everyone else around him, who knows him well, thinks the same thing of him. The solution, according to Bishop Ullathorne, is to be suspicious of our own suspicions in this regard, and to realize that experience shows that often they are unjust. Another issue that can be problematic for sensitive souls is being corrected. Weak souls often do not take correction well, but instead become irritable, angry, or sad. And Bishop Ullathorne says that where such is the case, rebuke has justified itself and has revealed to that soul an interior state of disorder that calls for the most vigorous redress. It is high time for that soul to become offended with her own conduct. Thus far, Bishop Ullathorne. And finally, there are abundant occasions to practice patience in areas that do not involve human interaction, things that we have to suffer, such as sickness or bodily injury, unpleasant weather, and that's definitely a good one for us here at Palm Stronzi. Plenty of opportunity for patience there. Tools or machines breaking down or not working as they ought. Bishop Ullathorne observes that some people have so little patience as to lose temper over the bite of a fly, or the dullness of a pen, the bluntness of a knife, or the tightness of a shoe. Like little children, devoid of reason, they ascribe guiltiness to things incapable of intention, and have their little revenge upon them at the expense of their sense, patience, and serenity. So let us turn to our Divine Redeemer and to our Mother Perpetual Succor and pray for the graces we need to overcome the anger, the irritable tendencies that we struggle with on a daily basis, whether they are very strong or whether they are much more subtle. May our Divine Redeemer.
So we'll finish up with the sadness on the last segment of this show. Thank you.
Carolina Catholic Media News. The 13th Annual Catholic Men's Conference of the Carolinas will be held on Saturday, March 18th at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church in Charlotte. Key Quarries. Who are you looking for? This Catholic Men's Conference was formed in 2010 with the objective of bringing Catholic men together throughout the Carolinas for a day of fellowship, faith, and sacraments to challenge each participant to grow their Catholic faith, deepen their relationship with Christ, and live up to their callings of Catholic men, husbands, and fathers. The day begins with registration at 7:30 a.m. with a full program of outstanding speakers, Mass, lunch, Rosary and Adoration. For details and registration, visit CatholicMenOfTheCarolinas.org. General admission, $40. For the Carolina Catholic Media News, I'm Pam Cullen. God bless y'all.
Teachers that care, professors that care about you. Just an awesome experience all around.
There's peace here. There's encouragement here.
Faculty, everybody that works here, they really set you up for success.
I don't think I have ever felt as loved and as supported and as encouraged as I have at the Abbey.
There's something here that's underlying and intrinsic. It's like a spirit of love and community. And I think the spirit is God's presence here.
Belmont Abbey College, a world away, but close to home. Visit us at belmontabbeycollege.edu.
Faith and charity are key elements of life, but are they at the center of your retirement planning and life insurance decisions? Knights of Columbus, a trusted organization with a proud history of more than 140 years of helping its members, can help Catholic families with insurance and retirement planning solutions. Most importantly, we do this in a way that is compatible with Catholic teaching and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops Investment Guidelines. Today, we have expanded our offerings to include retirement annuities, long-term care insurance, and disability income insurance. Beyond the benefits of financial protection, members may take satisfaction in knowing that Knights of Columbus contributes to causes that align with Catholic moral teaching. Let your faith inspire your financial decisions. Terms and conditions apply. Learn more by calling field agent Bob Gordon at 516-551-7838.
Welcome everybody back, Steve with Sense Fidelium Hour, coming at you with the last segment of this two-part series on patience that a monk did back in Scotland. He did about seven or eight different things. I actually made it all, I combined it all on my channel for it. It's about 2 hours and 13 minutes total of him going through about seven or eight different aspects. And the chapter is, he pretty much went through about seven chapters. I think there's 12, to be honest. The prayer consists of the last two, like patience during prayer, things like that. Things, I mean, again, get the book. Anyways, let me stop my yapping and let's get to our monk friend who's talking about, in this segment, the primary obstacle to patience is sadness.
So I mentioned earlier that in this life, the saints had a certain sort of foretaste of the happiness that they now enjoy in heaven. And after having treated a little bit on the virtue of patience in the last several live streams, I'd like to turn now to one of the primary obstacles to patience and to our salvation, which is sadness. The last few times when I spoke on the virtue of patience, I treated of this virtue following in the footsteps of Bishop William Ullathorne of Birmingham, who was bishop there during the mid-1800s. We had previously taken a look at sinful anger and vexation as being opposed to the virtue patience. But ordinarily, anger arises from sadness and ends in sadness. So now it is time to turn to that and to see how much of an obstacle it is. And to do this, I hope to look at, once again, the works of Bishop William Mellethorn and also of the Jesuit Father Alphonsus Rodriguez. The book of Ecclesiasticus in the Bible says this about sadness: "Cast sadness far from thee, because it has killed many and is good for nothing." St. John Cassian says that sadness is a disease more dangerous and harder to be cured than all other spiritual infirmities. "Beware," he says, "of admitting sadness into your soul, for if it once gets possession of you, it will soon take away your relish for prayer and spiritual reading. It will make you think them tedious and cause you to afford to each less time than ordinary. Nay, sometimes it will make you quite leave off both. And lastly, it will diffuse over all your spiritual exercises so much disgust and irksomeness that it will be almost impossible for you to continue them." Why is this? Bishop Mellethorn says, "Every inordinate outbreak of impatience, vexation, or anger is accompanied with sadness and terminates in greater sadness." He says, "Self-love is wounded, pride, humility, humiliated, vanity disappointed and put to shame, and sadness follows, depressing the soul, enfeebling the spirit, clouding the mind, warping the judgment, and paralyzing all generous virtue. The tendency of sadness is to brood over oneself and consider oneself as an ill-used and disappointed creature, deserving of better things. Then the fumes of melancholy take possession of the heart, which becomes sullen, heavy, and bitter, and finds a miserable satisfaction in nursing the wounds of self-love, in loneliness of soul, as though God and our friends were our adversaries." So we see from Bishop Mellethorn that sadness involves a turning away from God and our neighbor, and a turning inwards upon ourselves. And that is why it is opposed to a life of prayer, because prayer is directed towards God, and real prayer presupposes maintaining the presence of God. But giving away to sadness is a movement towards self-love. Cardinal Cajetan, the great commentator on the works of St. Thomas Aquinas, says that while cheerfulness looks to what we love and desire, sadness looks to what we do not like and would not have. And what we do not like, we hold in fear. And fear is much less in our power than those delightful thoughts that inspire cheerfulness. If, then, we take a morbid pleasure in sadness, it becomes far more injurious to the soul than the fear of evil. We must not forget that the virtues are connected with each other, and that charity is patient. But as charity prefers God to all things, it must prefer God to all those things that sadden the soul. And as Christian patience is caused by charity and cannot exist without charity, whatever we have to suffer should be endured with patience for the sake of the greatest good, is for the love of God and the doing of His will. So we see from Cardinal Cajetan that sadness takes us away from the greatest good, which is the good of charity. And it turns us and puts us in a position of discontented self-love. So patience, then, is needed to protect charity by enabling it to endure suffering. Mind on the immediate cause of our discomfort, suffering, or inconvenience, rather than looking beyond it to the first and ultimate cause. I'm sad because so-and-so said something rude to me. Or I'm sad because I believe such-and-such a person thinks badly about me. Or I'm sad because now I have to do this job that I didn't want to do. The problem here is that the sad person forgets to look beyond the immediate cause to God's will. The wind that destroyed the house, the robbers that came in and stole the cattle out of the fields, and the malice of Satan were only secondary causes of the sufferings of Job. But he was able to look beyond them to the first cause, which was God's will. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Job could see that God desired his perfection. God desired to prove Job's love for him, and sending occasions of suffering was the means that he had chosen or permitted for doing this. And it is the same for us. And this is where it is quite useful for us to occasionally go back and read the small pamphlet written by our Holy Father, St. Alphonsus, on uniformity with God's will. Not only because our perfection consists in this uniformity, but because it overcomes the sadness, which is rooted in pride, which is one of the chief obstacles to that perfection. So, having said that, what is the remedy for sadness? The Apostle St. James sums up what all the other saints say, that the chief remedy is prayer. If any one of you is sad, says St. James, let him pray. This requires a strong and difficult effort at first, because, as Bishop Ullathorne says, sadness broods in selfishness and is inclined to rest rather in our own unhappy thoughts than in God. The sad person turns to prayer with reluctance. So, in order to overcome this reluctance, we must begin with vocal prayer and persevere in that vocal prayer in order to obtain the right disposition before resuming recollected mental prayer. That's, again, is why St. Alphonsus is so keen on short ejaculations. They help us to begin that process of overcoming this harmful sadness in order to dispose us to being able to devote a greater period of time to mental prayer. Why is prayer so helpful for overcoming sadness? If you think about it, have you ever had it where you were troubled about something and you found that by speaking to someone about it, by unloading, so to speak, you felt like a heavy load is lifted off you?
Well, you know where he's going with that. At the end of the episode, sorry about that, ladies and gents. But anyways, just check out the YouTube channel. You'll see it. It's going to be called Resistance Podcast 248, The Incredible Virtue of Patience. It's on Apple, iTunes, YouTube, SpiritusTV.com. I think it's up there right now on Spiritus. And anyways, just check it out in the search bar. You'll find it. Anyway, if you're subscribed to the channel, you'll definitely see it. It's in the playlist. God love you. Have a great rest of the week.